Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking about consumer savings and investments in South Africa. We are joined by, you know, one of the world's top asset managers, that is Schroders, and specifically Condi Nkosi, who is Schroders country head for South Africa, because they recently did a global study, which actually found that 86% of South Africans have become more concerned about their financial well-being as a result of COVID-19, because the pandemic has actually affected their ability to save and invest as much as they would want to. So we're going to be getting into that conversation, just chatting around, I guess more importantly, what is the importance of consumer savings on overall investment in a country, and just what the outlook is, and perhaps the impact of COVID-19, which seems to have affected everything in and around the country. Condi, how are you?
Mudiwa, I'm doing very well, thank you, and it's great to chat to you again.
No, definitely. I think a good place for us to start is maybe getting a sense. We usually like to get a sense from our guests of the organizations that they do represent. So Schroders, you guys are a big asset manager around the world. Maybe you can give us a little bit of insight for some of our listeners or the audience that perhaps don't know much about Schroders.
Perfect. Yeah, I think that is a wonderful place to start. So, as you say, for the benefit of those that may not know our organization, we're a business that's been around for many, many years, well north of 200 years. The business was started back in 1804. It has evolved over the years. We did have a hand in the investment banking side of things, but we sold that business sort of early 2000s. To focus solely on asset management. So we're what they call an active investor. I'm sure your listeners have come across the passive investing, method of investing money where you're just following an index. We take a very different approach to that. We are an active investor. In other words, our portfolio managers and other investment professionals invest very differently to the index based on the views that they have. To give you a sense of our business, from a size perspective, we manage around about $804 billion US dollars. This is as at March of this year, and we are in something like 37 locations globally, South Africa being one. We are a listed entity, so we are a FTSE 100 company, but the Schroder family, the founding family, still control around about 48% of the business. So, lots of pedigree behind it. And as you rightfully say, one of the biggest asset managers in the world.
You know, when you talk about $800 billion US dollars worth of assets, asset under management, that is a massive number. Because in any given year, SARS is collecting between 1.3, 1.5 trillion rand, and $800 billion, dollars sits north of 10 trillion rand. So that's a massive amount of money that you guys have under management. So with that as context, then maybe you can give us a sense, because when it comes to consumer investments, most of the time when it comes to investing, we often talk about it from the perspective of institutional investors, forgetting the fact that consumer investing or retail investors, especially their savings, make up a big chunk of the funds that are actually available for some of that investing out there. So from the study that you guys have conducted, what are you guys actually seeing when it comes to, I guess, attitudes and the reality on the ground for people, their savings and their investments?
Yeah, good question, Mudiwa. So I think maybe even before I answer the question, just to kind of contextualize our study, just to give your listeners a sense of who exactly we surveyed in the study, I think that helps to paint the picture of the bits of information that we've gathered from the study. So we conduct these global investor surveys on an annual basis. We've been doing it for a number of years now. The most recent one, obviously, being the 2021 study. We carried that study between March and May this year. And it was done on close to 23,500 respondents across 32 locations globally. And, you know, the aim of the investor study, you know, you mentioned the retail investor. It's really about getting insights into how retail investors are thinking and I guess importantly behaving. So this year, the study was really trying to gather insights in terms of how the pandemic has affected how, you know, investors are thinking about the world and how they're behaving. There was quite a high bar for inclusion. We absolutely admit to this. So in the sense that the respondents needed to meet two high level criteria. So the first one was they must have the intention to invest at least 10,000 euros over the next 12 months. So in rand terms, depending on where the currency is, but that's sitting in the 170 to let's say 175,000 rand over the next 12 months. The other element of the criteria was that over the last 10 years, they would have had to make some sort of a change to their investment program. And it is effectively a proxy for how actively they engage with their savings or investments. So that's kind of the background to the study. In terms of kind of you know, what we saw out of the survey, there were a number of takeaways, but I think high level, the short answer is the pandemic has absolutely affected how people engage with their finances or how they view their finances.
What I'm interested in more than anything else is the criteria that you guys sort of set, that 10,000 euros, 170,000 rand sort of range. It would be interesting to get a sense, you know, in South Africa, you know, are there a lot of people that sort of fit into that criteria from what you guys were able to gather?
So, I mean, in plain numbers, there is quite a sizable cohort of people who have that, size of disposable income available for investment. However, we are the very, as I said in my contextualization, we're the first to admit that this isn't representative of the typical investor. I think the typical investor, that number is quite a high bar. But there are quite a large number of South African investors who would meet that criteria. There's quite a lot of research that's been done in this area beyond research that we've done ourselves, and you know, South Africa, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, Mudiwa, but South Africa does have quite a number of dollar millionaires that are in our markets here. So yeah, there's a decent size of retail investor that could meet that criteria.
Okay, cool. At least, you know, it sounds like there's a lot of people that you know, that do fit into that criteria, though, as you say, it's not a typical representation, but nonetheless, I'm sure that there are still some valuable insights that you guys were able to glean or garner from that particular sample. So what are we seeing on the ground? What have you guys actually noted? And is it is anything unexpected? Because I guess at this particular point, the attitude is that, you know, people's finances have been affected. Perhaps their inclination towards investment might have been negatively impacted. But what is the data actually telling you guys?
Yeah, so there are some insights that I guess are not particularly surprising, and some that actually are. And the other, I guess, complication of this study that we did, Mudiwa, is that we did it across multiple jurisdictions. So as I said, it was done across 32 jurisdictions. So there is some variation from a regional perspective as well. But to give you a sense of some of the things that I guess were not particularly surprising, maybe from a, let's start off from a global perspective. So almost three quarters of the people that we surveyed, the actual number is about 74%, have agreed or strongly agreed with the notion that their finances are much more front of mind following the pandemic than otherwise. Again, that's not particularly surprising given just how turbulent markets were, and you know, even going beyond markets, just how personally people were affected by the pandemics and the lockdowns and quite, you know, the virus itself. I mean, it's been quite unprecedented for a lot of us going through something like that. So it has jolted a lot of people into thinking a lot more about their finances. From a South Africa perspective, our results actually reflect that South Africans are even more in, you know, thinking about their investments even more. So while globally it was 74% of the people that we surveyed, within South Africa, that was as much as 86% of the people that we surveyed who said, right, investments are now, you know, really front of mind for us. So that's quite interesting from that perspective. Another stat that I'll share with you, and perhaps I'll give you a chance to engage some more on the other elements, is we asked people if over 2020 they were able to save more than they wanted to save as much as they wanted to save less, or save significantly less than what they wanted to save. Globally, that number was, and I think this is maybe indicative of those criteria that I mentioned earlier on about the inclusion factors, or the factors for inclusion of participants. But globally, nearly 80% of people said, despite the pandemic, they were able to save as much or significantly more than they wanted to save. Nearly 80%, which was a bit surprising. If you look at South Africa, that number is actually in the ballpark of about 59%. So 59% of the South Africans surveyed said they were actually able to save, you know, what they plan to, or more than they plan to. That makes a bit more sense, and it's probably less surprising, that particular stat, just in terms of how the pandemic affected, you know, the economy here locally. So a little bit of a difference from the global average and what South Africans experience themselves.
So can we just taking an inference from what you're saying then about the 59% as opposed to the 80+% seen in you know, in the rest of the world, from your particular study, could we then, you know, make a direct line to say that South Africans haven't participated as much in the equities boom that we saw, let's say, in the last year? Because, you know, though things were depressed, stock markets around the world, especially in places like the US, actually, you know, did very well. So would it be fair to make such an inference?
I think based on the way that we conducted the survey and with the people that we conducted the survey, who I think we've agreed that is perhaps not quite as representative, but that inference is not too far off the mark, in that people just weren't able to save as much. Now, the question was not asked in terms of where did you actually place those savings. So even the people that saved, it's possible that it was to, you know, I don't know, a money market account as opposed to, you know, an equity fund or a balance fund or whatever that does have exposure to the US equities. But based on kind of the information that we've got, it's not an unfair inference to make, Mudiwa. I mean, there is a portion of the survey where, on a forward-looking basis, we asked participants if, you know, those that are going to increase their savings or maintain the current savings rate, where exactly they would place those savings. And the results from that portion, and admittedly, it is forward looking, so I appreciate that it doesn't quite answer the question you're asking, but in garnering some insights, 37% of the respondents globally, only 37% mentioned that they would place their assets into their savings money into what one can term high risk investments. About 47% odd mentioned that they would, you know, put that money into just general savings. And then another 47% stated that they would place it into lower risk investments. Now, I know that doesn't quite add up to 100 because some people would have selected multiple categories, but directionally, it seems as though there is a sense of aversion towards risk in at least forward-looking avenues for saving.
Actually, maybe as a quick follow-up to that, as a point of clarity, when we talk about high-risk savings, you know, specifically on that 37% of people that say that, you know, they would put their savings into something like that, what do we mean by high-risk investments?
Right. So this would be things like, you know, high equity balanced funds or equity funds. Or for those who have the minimum investment criteria, investment amounts, it would be include even things like private equity and so on. But it tends to be these investment or asset classes, as we call them, that are a little more volatile. So, you know, as I said, equities or, you know, high equity balanced funds and so on, things in within that that those categories, would you?
Okay, cool. That certainly makes sense when you put it like that. I want to take a step back, you know, Kondi, if you'll allow me, to maybe get a sense of, because right now we've been talking a lot about, you know, consumer savings, retail investors, etc. But just from your experience and as someone who is in asset management, talking to clients, etc., do you see any difference between the what you call this, between the attitudes, the investing attitudes between retail and institutional investors, you know, simply because a lot of the time it's ordinary people's money that's going into the institutional, you know, the institutional funds that ends up being invested. Do you find that there's a difference between, you know, those two groups of people in terms of their attitudes at the moment, in terms of at least investing their money?
Yeah, again, another good question, Mudio. And to bolster your point, I mean, arguably the biggest segment of the institutional investor landscape would be pension funds. And pension funds are effectively, you know, yours and my money as employees of a company that are just aggregated. And then there's a board of trustees that represent our views. But again, to answer the question, one has to make sort of these broad brush strokes as opposed to, you know, getting too granular. But in a nutshell, the short answer is yes, we do see some differences. And I think the biggest one is probably around this sense of, you know, the longevity of an investment decision that's been taken. So the institutional investors tend to have, you know, a higher sense of patience and time to see through whatever investment strategy that they've put in place. It's very difficult to kind of stay invested when you know there's blood on the streets, when things are going really, really bad. So there's a high temptation to make changes as an individual investor versus an institutional investor. I think, you know, people often talk about fear and greed. So, you know, when things are going badly, there's a strong temptation to kind of get away from the horrible markets. And, you know, when things are going really well, there's a strong temptation to kind of want to hold on even longer. And arguably it could be, you know, the incorrect decision at any point in time. But in our experience, the institutional investors tend to have, you know, a much longer horizon in the way that they approach things, because there's a significant amount of work that goes in right at the beginning in putting in place that investment strategy, factoring in the possibility of bad markets or very good markets or whatever the case may be. And so when these things happen, they kind of go back to the you know, reason why they put that investment program in place. I think there tends to be a bit more higher discipline when it comes to institutional investors. But that is not to say that retail investors, there are no retail investors that have that mindset, because one can argue equally that a financial advisor who assists a retail investor in putting together an investment program, you know, one follows a similar approach. But generally speaking, we find that, you know, institutional investors tend to stick with, you know, the plans a lot harder than your typical retail investor.
You know, and also, you know, on that one, I think it sort of speaks to, I guess, an educational component as well, because I can imagine that for institutional investors, you usually have people that have been in the game for a while, people that have seen the wild swings of the markets, the ups, the downs, volatility, and they sort of know that on aggregate, it's either going to go up or down. And, you know, decisions are sort of more informed, you know, based on that experience as opposed to, you know, the emotion of, you know, a bad time. So as we end off, Kondi, maybe you can give us your outlook just around investment. Usually when we have investors on the, not investors, economists, sorry, on this platform, we usually ask for the GDP sort of outlook, you know, where do they see growth going or coming from? But in your case, as an investment professional, someone who has their finger on the pulse just around what's going on in the investment landscape, are you hopeful just around what's going on in the investment landscape, or do you think that COVID-19 has battered perceptions and attitudes in such a way that there's still a lot of way to go to recover some of that sentiment?
Thanks for the question, Mudiwa. You know, whilst we are asset managers, we don't have perfect
a crystal ball.
A crystal ball. There you go. We don't have a crystal ball or perfect foresight. But I think we think markets are probably going to be a bit more challenged and a bit more difficult, sort of the next 5 to 10 years out than they were in the previous 5 to 10 years. And there's a number of sort of long-term factors that are driving that. Things around, you know, things that are impact the factors of production. I mean, without getting into the strict detail, but we're talking things like productivity levels, population growth levels, quite a lot of disruption that's happening from a technology perspective, you know, beyond just the pandemic. So there's a number of you know, disruptive forces and economic forces that we think are going to make the environment quite a bit more difficult going forward. Now, does that mean that, you know, people must stay on the sidelines and not participate in markets? Absolutely not. I think that the bigger issue is how you participate in these markets. I alluded earlier on, just after your intro, the discussion around passive versus active investing. In our view, with this challenged backdrop going forward, we think active asset management is going to be absolutely critical. Again, not to say that there's no place for passive investing, but in an environment where you've got challenged, you know, return outlook, it becomes very, very important to partner with the right managers that can navigate those difficult and challenging markets. So, you know, we're not, you know, completely, you know, doomsayers in terms of markets, but we do absolutely subscribe to the notion that markets are going to be more difficult going forward. And it's really important to think around active asset management as opposed to just purely allocating to passives.
So that's been us. We're talking to Kondi Nkosi, who is the country head for South Africa at Schroders. They are a global asset manager, giving us some insight into a recent study that they've done on the level of savings and investment, you know, in South Africa. And he was, you know, sharing some of their insights, but also giving us the context within which they did that study. They were surveying people that have have at least 10,000 euros or around 170,000 rand to invest, you know, asking, you know, questions around, you know, do they want to actually invest in the market? And if so, you know, what are some of the places that people are wanting to put, you know, their money in? Is it going to be, you know, risky, you know, sort of assets like equities, you know, or are people looking to do, you know, sort of more passive investing? Towards the end there, you hear Nkosi is giving us, you know, making a case for the active asset manager as opposed to passive investing. Yes, there's a place for passive investing, but he's saying that at this time, when people have gone through what they have, he's saying that active asset management is critical to get people through this period. Kondi, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Mudiwa. Great chatting to you.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Savings from a consumer point of view are very, very, very important. I think sometimes people don't fully understand, you know, what they actually mean, because we've got investment as we do in the market. But most of the time, the more that consumers actually invest, the more that people, ordinary people, are saving money, they can actually invest it for their own. But usually the greater the amount of savings, the more money that there is in the financial systems to actually lend out to companies, to businesses, organizations that want to expand their operations, that want to build new offices, that want to build roads, schools, hospitals, that type of thing. I think that's the other piece of this savings agenda, or the savings discussion, that we didn't necessarily touch on, but is, you know, quite an important and key one to understand. And coupled with that is the fact that all of these funds, especially from a pension point of view, like Kondi mentioned, feed into the world of asset managers and institutional investors through the pension funds, which are a huge proportion of the investment funds that actually flow through the financial system. So as ordinary people, we need to always be cognizant of those issues, because it is the efforts of the collective that actually drive, you know, a lot of these big projects. We see billion-dollar companies, we see trillion-dollar companies now, and a lot of them, the investors, you know, are ordinary people through pension funds, through savings, etc. So it might not seem like much, whatever saving you have as a person, but the collective is what's important. And as long as attitudes amongst people are negative, then that feeds into a negative narrative around overall investment. So going forward, it will be interesting to see how studies like this do evolve when Schroders does its next investor sort of study. But at the same time, coupled with other studies that we've been keeping an eye on the Business Day Spotlight, like the Consumer Vulnerability Index, you know, such as consumer confidence, all of these different things all feeding into, you know, this one picture, this one dashboard around what the health of consumers is, what is the health of their savings and investment, what is the overall health of the South African economy. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.